In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
Does South Dakota need to do something different to prevent corruption in government? From SDPB, today is Tuesday, August 13th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley joins us in studio. We'll talk about an alleged embezzlement of state funds, and we'll also review the crime statistics from this year's Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. Then, are you comfortable being known online for your job? Today's Teacher Talk welcomes TikTok teacher Gabe Dannenfring as our guest. We'll talk about modeling good social media behavior in the classroom and in life. Plus, the next Leadership South Dakota class gets ready to gather. John T. Meyer is with us later in the hour. We are broadcasting live today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The motorcycles are heading home, and we are inching closer to Election Day in November. We're going to take a look at crime and safety data from the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally and a preview a few South Dakota ballot initiatives. Our guest is South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley. He's seated across the table from me in our Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Lori.
Let's talk a little bit about Sturgis first and wrapping things up. One big change, lots of cash seizures. What does that mean exactly?
Well, certainly it means there's more drug activity during the rally. I grew up in Sturgis, so I see the positive aspects that it brings to the businesses, the vendor opportunities, the concerts. But there is an element of the drug trade that happens to show up during the rally. Law enforcement with our proactive operations is doing a good job. We saw increased numbers on the fentanyl side, which is concerning because fentanyl is so dangerous, especially with young people. We've seen across the state and across our nation a lot of tragedies dealing with fentanyl. But overall, it was a fairly safe rally with some levels of drug activity. And then on the human trafficking side, again, proactive operations. There were 7 arrests and charges brought with people that were looking to do harm to children.
Yeah, $71,000 in cash seizures. That's not T-shirt money, is what you're telling me.
That's right. That's a level of drug activity that is concerning and that we're addressing.
Tell me about the human trafficking sting, the sex trafficking sting. 7 people scooped up that, all of them fairly young.
Young and local. So these operations are a joint effort. The federal authorities, state authorities, and local law enforcement come together. We work through the ICAC, Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, that our legislature funds every year and assists us. And we run an operation to be proactively catching individuals that are looking to harm children. They respond to our ads, and then they show up or do levels of communication where they're trying to entice or do harm to a child.
I'm going to ask this question, even though it's going to sound ridiculous to people that this makes sense to, but I ask it because I had a friend once whose loved one was caught up in one of these stings, and she was, obviously, that's very hard to process. And one of her concerns was there was, quote, no victim. And so for people who see these crimes and say, well, no children were hurt, it's an email back and forth, it's a thing. How do you describe the importance of doing this kind of operation when somebody else says, well, this is entrapment?
I think the importance is the last thing you would want the attorney general or law enforcement to do is sit around and wait till somebody goes and hurts a child. This is our opportunity to come forth and try to proactively intervene or stop that individual. Our operations at times will go so far as to give the responder the opportunity to show up at the hotel or the meeting location. When they do certain steps, it becomes apparent they're going to act. And ultimately, those are issues for the judge at the time of sentencing. The crime has been committed, but there might be mitigation or aggravating factors. I don't believe there should be an aggravating factor just because I believe it's reached a point where they're going to do harm to a child, and we want to stop that from happening. But I recognize those are the arguments we sometimes face, and we rely on the judge to make that right decision.
We will have recreational marijuana on a ballot in November. Are we seeing the fact that so many other states have legalized recreational marijuana turn up in the crime statistics at the rally at all?
We are. When we look at the misdemeanor drug arrests, which is really the marijuana, there can be a few others, but that's marijuana. We had 281 arrests this year compared to the 246 last year. So the numbers are up, and oftentimes it is because they're coming from Colorado or Washington or Oregon, and they feel that it's legal there, and so they should be able to bring it here, which is not the case.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, I want to get to the ballot questions, but first let's talk about another scandal with state money. Where is this case? This is a DSS case where an employee was embezzling $1.8 million over a series of three different administrations. That's a pretty significant problem. What can you tell us about where that case is at now that people might need to know?
It is significant. We brought two felony charges. The reason for two charges is because the law changed in 2013. She was located in Iowa when we made the arrest. We went through the extradition process. She cooperated in that process and was brought to South Dakota. I personally attended her initial appearance. Her next appearance is end of August. She's received court-appointed counsel because of her financial situation. I would anticipate that the criminal case will move forward in that fashion, and the legislature, perhaps even before session, is going to need to begin asking some questions about what checks and balances are put in place, whether additional checks and balances should exist. I can say from what we've seen in the investigation, Governor Noem is putting in place some checks and balances, which is how that case was discovered. The next question is what additional needs to be done by the governor's office, and what should the legislature do with respect to the appropriation process, audits, and the internal controls board?
How much of an influence do you have in some of that? And I'm getting at this bigger idea of, if you've lived in South Dakota for a while, you have the EB-5 scandal, Gear Up or Mid-Central Education Co-op scandal, and now a DSS scandal. And with this one, you're looking back, allegedly, at some conduct that was a few years ago. I think everybody is waiting for something to stop this kind of bloodletting of public money. Enough is enough. How do you respond to that when people approach you with frustration?
Enough is enough, because these are taxpayer dollars, and they've gone on for long periods of time, as you've mentioned. I feel the job of the Attorney General can be impactful on this because, number one, we bring the investigation and the charge. Charges were brought in EB-5, charges were brought in Gear Up, charges were brought in DSS. The second thing that the Attorney General can do is, while I don't get to make a decision on the internal controls, I have an opportunity to meet with a cooperative governor, an opportunity to testify to the legislature, and testify, number one, about the investigation. What did we find? What were the checks and balances that existed? In the DSS matter, you literally had, according to the allegations, she's presumed innocent, you had a person requesting money for children, also approving that request. There weren't the checks and balances necessary, and the audits didn't occur. I'm a strong believer, too, the Attorney General can talk about the audit process, why that would catch things like that, going beyond what we call a single audit, which is really a spot check, to being able to go beyond that. And I think that's going to require resource decisions by the legislature, and then a further evaluation of the internal controls board was put in place by the legislature. It's not necessarily working. What can we do to make it work?
Right. And we have GOAC, we have the internal controls board. People don't want just another board.
I feel we should take and evaluate the existing boards and improve them. And the way to improve them is to give them auditing responsibilities. I know we do that through legislative audit, which is that arm that protects. But there needs to be some consistency going with respect to what audits are occurring and when.
All right. So probably we'll be talking about this again as, between now and legislative session, but I imagine some of this stuff is going to come up during the legislative session as
It will.
Well. Yeah.
And I anticipate it's going to come up because I can't go into detail now, but we are involved in a fourth investigation. We should be making our determinations in the near future. It's a little bit different nature than the ones that South Dakota's experienced, but it has the common theme of it's taxpayer dollars, and at least in the Attorney General's belief, not going in the right place, and there needs to be checks and balances to prevent that. And again, the governor's office is cooperating, working with us, and I appreciate that. They're not putting up roadblocks. They're not sweeping it under the rug. They're reaching out to the Attorney General and saying, we're finding these things. You need to look at it and do what you need to do.
All right. A fourth conversation will be had in the days ahead. Let's pivot to the days ahead and look into November. And you and I were talking before we turned the microphones on. I've seen a billboard in town that I was like, wow, that's confusing, because it has the, you know, a letter and a no versus a yes, and it was already confusing. And I knew what they were talking about. You're getting people coming up to you and saying, what is on the ballot? What are some of the most frequently asked about ballot questions that when people bump into you, they want you to explain?
The real question I get is, what does yes mean and what does no mean? And okay, we have seven different ballot measures that oftentimes by their sponsors are crafted in such a way that that becomes confusing. And sometimes it's just by very nature. But when you look, for instance, at Senate Bill 201, which has become a very hot topic in South Dakota because of pipelines, mm-hmm, the legislature passed legislation. The public, at least segments, were not happy with that. And so they did what's called a referendum. And now the people are going to decide. So in that instance, a yes vote is yes, the law goes into effect, what the legislature proposed. A no vote is what the legislature proposed will not go into effect.
Now, often you can say on these ballot explanations, the Constitution will not be changed or things will be, but this is not a constitutional law. So does it defer back to the counties then? Because this is about who decides what the parameters are for if the carbon capture pipeline or if any kind of linear infrastructure gets, you know, wants to come through your state. How do you explain to people, whether they're voting with the state or the county, what the stakes of that are?
Oftentimes I couch it in terms of, this is a local control issue. Should it be handled at the local level or should it be handled more consistently at the state level? And I don't think it's any deeper than that. I mean, I believe that it will come down to a control issue, who should control it.
All right. Also, abortion is top of mind for many people because there's litigation now. Help us understand how that is all playing out.
Right now, South Dakota has a trigger law when it comes to abortion. That was put in the past so that when the Dobbs decision reversed Roe v. Wade, that law came into effect. Right now, the public likely will get a vote on. I say likely because that litigation you mentioned is involving whether or not the Secretary of State should have certified that particular measure. And the judge has recently ruled on it. It went up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court partially reversed, and so now that case is back into court. In the event that it gets through that process, it'll be on the ballot, and the Attorney General's explanation really breaks it down to trimesters. There's a first trimester that is essentially the wild, wild west where the legislature or authorities can't put any controls on it. The second trimester, there are levels of controls that can be put in place, and that really deals with the health of the mother. If it's related to the health of the mother, those laws would be constitutional. And then the third one would be, it has to really be for the health or saving the life of the mother, much similar to what is currently in place on that third trimester. There'll be a lot of discussion about that. I would assume there'll be some money spent in South Dakota to educate. I just encourage on all these issues. This particular one, the previous Attorney General wrote, but it's a good explanation, and I didn't override it. I've kept it in place. I just encourage people that the Attorney General's responsibility in 200 words or less, I smile about that because I really could use a few more words, is supposed to take a neutral look at it and tell the people of South Dakota, this is what it means. This is what a yes does, and this is what a no does, and let the people decide and then defend that decision once the people make that decision.
Wild, wild west didn't sound neutral.
Well, the reality is when it says the state can't put any laws in place, that would be
we'll leave that for a political discussion. But I guess for our intents and purposes here with you, is it possible that the question gets on the ballot, that people vote on it, and then it dissipates and it goes away? What would that scenario be? Or that we shouldn't have, this whole thing of whether or not it should be on the ballot is making some people uneasy.
Really, there'll be two points of probable litigation. The early point that we're in right now will decide whether or not it goes on the ballot. And then one would anticipate, as hotly contested an issue this is, a social issue that's on everybody in South Dakota's mind, it will go to, if it does pass, further litigation as to whether it goes into effect. That's really what happened on the marijuana issue. It was allowed on the ballot, and then there was litigation on it. On the recreational side, it was overturned, and now we're back to voting on it again.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts that you want people to have? I'm sure you've got a busy agenda today, but last comments on what's coming up with those ballot questions and how people can continue to educate themselves.
There's 7 ballot questions. They're all important on the daily lives of South Dakotans. My encouragement is take the time, read those explanations, take a look at the full text if you have further questions, and make the most informed vote you can, because again, these are very important. They range from the life issue. They include that local or state control with respect to land. They include marijuana. There's just a lot at stake here for people to make informed decisions on. Yeah.
Medicaid work requirements, and more. Attorney General Marty Jackley, thank you so much for stopping by. I'm sure this is not the last time we will talk between now and an election.
Thanks, Lori. Great to be on your show.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Kids these days are getting ready to go back to school, and they're thinking about how they will use what they're about to learn in a new school year. Teachers these days are getting their classrooms ready, and they are thinking about their leadership in those classrooms. For today's Teacher Talk, we have more from our conversation with South Dakota science teacher and social media influencer Gabe Dannenbring. You can find our full conversation on the Teacher Talk podcast. Find that on any of your preferred podcast platforms. Today, we're going to tackle a few broad topics. What does it mean to grow up and become a YouTuber? Is that a job? How do you get comfortable being known if you're a teacher and an introvert? How do you take advice from strangers that you want zero advice from in real life? Here is a little more about the SDPB Teacher Talk educators. Gina Benz is in her 25th year of teaching. She is a recipient of the Milken Educator Award, which is one of teaching's biggest honors. Jackie Wilbur is a faculty member at the University of South Dakota. She directs the Center for Student and Professional Services in the School of Education there. Take a listen. Do you want to recruit more teachers, invite more teachers into profession, elevate the profession of teaching? What is your purpose on social media?
I've got a couple different things, a couple different purposes of my social media. One of them is I want to shed light on the career as a whole. It is so hard to be a teacher. We have so much pressure on our shoulders. And as teachers, we just want somebody to say something that we are all feeling. We want somebody to stand up and say, hey, here's what happened to me today. This is crazy. Or they'll say, you know what? I don't know if I agree with what is going on right now in this education world. And then there's so many other people, for me, literally millions, that say, thank you for saying that. Mm-hmm. I agree. Or teachers just want to laugh. I want to be able to be an outlet for teachers where I can be hyper relatable, and teachers appreciate that. The other thing that I want to do is I want to get young people into the profession. Mm-hmm. There are so many stories out there right now about how hard it is to be a teacher, all the negatives. And there are hard things about being a teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to gaslight people and say this is the easiest time ever to be a teacher. No, it's probably the hardest time ever. Yeah. And I own that. And I want other people to see young people, even though teaching is hard, it's doable. You can have fun while you do. The joy is still there. There's a lot of hard days. There's a lot of hard moments. There's a lot of times that you have to put on a smiling face, even though you're struggling, but it's still an incredible profession. And then the last point that I like to bring up is I want to show students how to have a healthy relationship with social media. Mm-hmm. Social media exists. It's there. It's going to be here forever, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to get rid of social media. And as teachers, we're called to be models. We're supposed to model how you act. So are we going to put our head in the sand and act like this social media stuff doesn't exist? Mm-hmm. The thing that is a huge part of every kid's day, are we going to do that? Or are we going to say, hey, let's own it. Let's embrace it. Let's mm-hmm. model to these students, here's how you can act on social media and have a large following, have cool career opportunities, and still keep it clean. I don't think I've said 3 swear words on my entire social media account mm-hmm. in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten my profile to over 2 million followers and have completely changed my life. So I want kids to see that. And there's so many kids, when you ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? They want to be a YouTuber. They want to be a TikToker. Okay, love that for you. You can do that. I want to show you that if a dorky middle school science teacher in South Dakota can do it, mm-hmm. man, anybody can do it. So those are kind of my 3 goals with it. And then with that, I always keep in mind, am I shedding a positive light on education? Mm-hmm. So I try to keep that at the forefront as well.
Yeah, love that. I want to go back into that kids wanting to grow up and be this in a moment. But first, for Gina and Jackie, this is leadership. This mm-hmm. is what this mm-hmm. is what you're doing on a daily basis, although not with 2 million followers. But you're thinking, how am I influencing? How am I modeling? How am I recruiting? We talk about this a lot. So what comes up for you when you look at his work, but also the words that he's saying here in our studio, that resonate?
I think it's profoundly brave in a way mm-hmm. that's really refreshing and authentic to be doing what you're doing. Because it's not like eyes weren't already on you. When you're a teacher, all these eyes are on you anyway. And so I think for some people, there's this tendency to say, let me try and shut these other areas of my life down. I won't have any social media. I'll try not to go to the grocery store when I know a lot of people will be there so I don't bump into family mm-hmm. members or students. And you are just fully embracing the fact that not only will that happen, but that's okay because I'm comfortable with who I am, and it's okay if a lot of people know me. And mm-hmm. I think that is what is very inspiring. And so it's helpful to all teachers, I think, to see you doing what you're doing, to say, oh, look, here's a person having a good work-life balance. Here's a person being themselves out in the public. And not only are you getting positive reinforcement for it, there's like the school district has been supporting you too. Mm-hmm. So I just think there's been a lot of really good modeling here all the way around for students, for teachers, for the community, for school district leaders, for us at the university. It's helped me when I've been coaching young people to say, because that used to be kind of the mentality is like, don't have social media at all while you're mm-hmm. in your student teaching year, your teacher residency year. It's just too complicated. And now we've been able to say, well, maybe watch Gabe Tannenbrink's TikTok and see if that's something you want to do. And if it is, you mm-hmm. could think about that. And if it's not, then maybe shut it down, you know, or just to have the conversation, but mm-hmm. to have another example other than don't.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't just say be like Gabe.
No.
Because no one's going to be like Gabe.
Exactly.
If you're an introvert, mm-hmm. maybe you're an introvert. You don't seem.
I wouldn't classify myself as one.
I don't know if you get away with that.
I don't want to place that label on you. But if you're an introvert, can you still do that? Well, of course you can.
Sure.
Social media might be a perfect place for an introvert to show up in the world. So it's not just do this.
Right.
Or
right.
measure yourself by this. But mm-hmm. it is, what are the things that he is doing that resonate with you, that can help you show up and feel good about being known, have the influence that you want to have in the world, but that feel true for you.
Exactly.
And there might be some people, there's probably hundreds of thousands of teachers that look at what I do and say, I would never want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying everybody has to be on social media making these videos. I'm just saying we got to embrace it as a profession
mm-hmm.
because our students are so stressed out and scared of what's on social media and don't know how to swim in that ocean of social media, which is new. So let's model it as adults. Let's show them how to do it if you are willing to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about that a little bit because how much are you editing, for example? I think it's all about I was watching one of your videos. I'm like, it probably took him hours to put this together. And then I was like, or not. I have no idea.
I've gotten so much better at it. I've gotten so much more efficient at it. Each video is different. Some of them I'll put in my laptop and really edit it, edit the audio, make it really high production value. Mm-hmm. Some of them I am pointing, shooting, and then trim it. I've gotten really efficient with it. If the average person tried to edit my videos, I would say it would take them probably an hour per video with how much edits I do put into. But I can get videos cranked out pretty quickly now, which is good. And it's made me way more tech savvy, which I do like having that mm-hmm. skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the students who say, I want to grow up and do that mm-hmm. as a job, what do you want to tell them? I think about, I got interviewed one time by a student who was, the mother contacted me because they had a school project and they had to interview somebody who had the job that they wanted when they grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to be a spy.
Ooh, and you got interviewed.
And so my friend was like, do you know anybody who's a spy? I'm like, have I got a deal for you? Like, when I did intelligence in the military, I was a spy. And this is this. So, yes, I can talk to her. So we have this conversation. What did you do? What can you tell me? We talked about, you know, military intelligence. And then she said, well, what kind of things should I do to if I wanted to do that when I grew up? And I just kind of froze for a minute. And then I was like, camping? Like,
smart.
I was like, it helps if you like being outside where nobody knows you're there. So go camping a lot. She was like, okay. I like that. So what are the things that if somebody wants to do that, mm-hmm. you say, you know what? It wouldn't be a bad idea to get comfortable doing this.
Get comfortable. I love that. Get comfortable getting feedback from people that you do not want feedback from. There's so many different things to unpack with like a social media career. I would first tell somebody if they want to do it, are you ready for the bad days? Because the bad days can get really, really, really loud. They can get loud. You can have people in your messages, in your comments, saying things about you that aren't true, and it can hurt. And social media is a lot like teaching in a way where you get emotional whiplash. Mm-hmm. So I say teaching, you get emotional whiplash where I look at this year. I had one student in my third period swearing at me, you know, and I'm like, wow, this is terrible. I'm not doing a good job. Next class period, I'm giving a kid a hug because he's crying mm-hmm. about the situation at home. Mm-hmm. All that took place within 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. One person's telling me they hate me. One person is crying. Mm-hmm. That's hard. Mm-hmm. The same thing with social media. And lately, I've been lucky enough to go on to like political shows and talk about things in education. I don't get political. I don't really take a massive stance one way or the other. I just talk about it. And I went on Fox News. And I had one of the DMs said, oh my gosh, thank you for saying what you said. Awesome. Next comment or next message I got, they said that I was a Nazi. So which one is it? Am I the terrible person or am I the one that's doing so good? So those are the bad things that come from it. And then multiply that by 10, 100,000, you know, million. How big do you want it to be? How loud do you want those people who you don't know who they are giving you feedback? How loud do you want that? So I don't want people to think that I don't want people getting into it. I think you definitely have to think about, is it worth getting into? For me, absolutely it's worth it for me. I've got thick enough skin, I can take it. But that doesn't mean I don't have my rough days. Mm-hmm. When I went on the reality show on Netflix, when it got released, there were some things with the edit that I wasn't a big fan of. They twist and change things because it's reality TV. And it got really loud for me. It was really hard reading some of the tweets that were out there. And I have been doing this for a long time, and I still felt it. So I definitely think for kids, it is doable. If I can do it, anybody can do it. But it's hard. It's also very, very hard.
There's a big difference between making your own thing mm-hmm. and allowing somebody else to turn you into a character mm-hmm. in a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be hard for kids to understand the difference. Making your own social media and getting criticized is different from going on a reality TV show yeah. where somebody's going to craft a narrative with you as the character that mm-hmm. might not fit how you saw yourself as a character. Yeah.
Reality TV does a great job of making people look one-dimensional. Yeah. They have the superhero, the villain, the ditzy person. Like, they put you in this category. Most people aren't one-dimensional. That's right, not how right. we are, but that doesn't make entertaining TV. They
Jackie,
want that.
You watched the show. How did he
you were
across?
Casted as the teacher. And I feel like that was, like, the main point of your character was that you were a teacher. And were you leveraging that for any particular reason to benefit your strategy on the show? And I was like, wow. I've never thought about leveraging my career as an educator to benefit me in some way before.
Well, and it was so funny, like going into the show, I was used to having a large audience and I was used to people giving me the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Then I go on reality TV and say, I'm a teacher. If I win this cash prize, two things I want to do. Buy a Corvette, donate to Native American kids in South Dakota. Two things I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. And then quickly, people are like, he's lying. He just wants to buy a car. It's like, or I'm telling the truth, or I care about that. So it was interesting, but life still goes on. And the other thing about like social media that I think kids need to realize is it is very hard. It is so hard to be creative. And it's easy, not easy, but relatively easy to make a video go viral. A lot of people have a story about, oh, I had a video go viral once. Okay, well now multiply that over years. Can you have those creative ideas over years? And if you are a creative, man, get into this industry. It is awesome. It's so fun for me to be able to be creative and creative in topics that I care about. And I'm creative in education. I love education. I love being a teacher. I love talking about being a teacher. And I've just been super lucky.
Gina, I want to ask you this question, and maybe it's a little hard. But you've been teaching a lot longer than Gabe has.
I'm old. I'm a veteran.
I didn't say old. No, I didn't say extrovert. I didn't say old.
This is year 25 I'm going into.
Yes. Yes. You're in your 25th year. When you look at this enthusiasm and you look at the innovation that we're hearing and you look at the passion that you're hearing, I'm guessing all these things are landing on you in a very good way, but also there's a wisdom that you're going to bring to the room. Are there things that you want him to know what his 25th year will look like that you think would be valuable to him now? Or you just take a young teacher and you just say, you know what, this is awesome, go for it, do you? Or do you ever take a young teacher and say, I want you to think about this next? If you're mentoring him, is there a way that you rely on again and again to say, ask these self-reflective questions, ask these self-reflective questions?
You just answered it for me. You find a mentor. Mm-hmm. And you find someone you can be 100% vulnerable with, and somebody you respect, somebody who has earned their stripes, you could say, in the profession. And that's what I did right away. I found mentors, and they gave me a lot of wisdom. They told me when I was going the wrong direction, and they told me when I was going the right direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get a mentor.
You get a mentor. Can help you with that. You have mentorship in that, because the other thing is when you get to a certain stratosphere, it might be hard to find a mentor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no mentor in the social media world and how to handle it and how to handle the pressure. And I always make sure to keep the first thing first, which is teaching. So when I have the mentors around me, I'm like, hey, I'm here for teaching. Talk to me about teaching. How do I get better as a teacher? How do I have that balance? And then when you have the, you know, quote unquote fame, the recognizability and the pressure that comes with that, then that's finding a different type of mentor. And I've been so lucky where there's assistant principal here in town where he and I will get coffee once a month and we'll talk about things. We'll talk about things in education and bounce ideas off each other and hold each other accountable. And I to your point, like you need a mentor. Yeah. And there's been so many things in my life that my eyes have been open to because I've had somebody with more experience say, hey, pump the brakes here on this and let's think about some of your decisions. And that's like other young teachers, they need to have mentors. And I wish I would have gotten a mentor early in my teaching profession, because you make a lot of mistakes and you don't know that you're making mistakes until you look back on it and you say, God, I can't believe I did that. Oh my gosh, that was crazy.
Yeah. What works in a video right now? When you look at the ones that are really hitting big, what makes a successful post for you?
Entertaining and relatability. Mm. I'd say the biggest thing is relatability. Mm-hmm. I think that's my account, is I can relate to the masses. I can relate to the teacher. I can relate to the parents. I can relate to the people who are 26 years old. Like I can hit those different types of people. And then the other thing that I always think about with social media, and I tell a lot of people, is social media influencers are now the modern day sitcom characters. So what I mean by that is, in the 90s and 2000s, we loved sitcoms. We loved these characters. We loved Friends. We loved Seinfeld. We love all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, one day, we hear this laugh track and we say, God, this doesn't feel authentic anymore. This doesn't feel real. And then we went away from sitcoms. And now if you go online, you have these new characters that you follow. My character, I'm the teacher. I'm the young teacher guy. That's my character that I play. And it's a real character because it's my everyday life. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be the type of influencer and teacher influencer who quits teaching and still makes videos about, I'm in the trenches with you every day. No, you're not. I'm not going to lie about that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that people need to be careful about, is when you watch some of these social media influencers and videos, a lot of them twist and change stories so it benefits their platform. So I kind of went on a little bit of a rant there, but that's something about why I think my platform has worked, is the hyper-relatability.
I want to talk about the relatability. That's just good teaching, too. Mm-hmm. When I am in my public school classroom, I need to create relatability with whatever we're talking about. I will admit, I think it's easier as an English teacher, because books are empathy machines. There is relatability built in. When you're the calculus teacher, I think you can still do it. And I know some amazing calculus teachers who do it. But all levels, all subjects, can you make it relevant and meaningful for these students?
Mm-hmm. Even if it's a rock.
Yeah. Even if it's sedimentary rocks. I remember sedimentary. Yeah. Limestone.
Look at you.
Ignatius.
Come on.
I think so.
No. That's a person.
Igneous? Igneous rocks?
I don't know. Igneous.
And I want to bring up one more point, piggybacking off of you, and you ladies can chime in on this as well. I think the best way to be relatable is to show emotion. Mm-hmm. And for teachers, if you want to be relatable in your classroom, you have to show emotion. You have to show that we are human beings. Mm-hmm. We have a life, and we feel emotions just as much as our students. And just like our students, they're living that day for the first time. Mm-hmm. As teachers, we're living that day for the first time as well. We are doing the best that we can every single day. And when we tell our students that, it makes us relatable and it gives us that buy-in from our classroom. And I bring that into the social media world.
You can find the companion blogs for SDPB's Teacher Talk on our website, sdpb.org/teachertalk. Download the podcast on your preferred platform and be one of the 2 million or so people who follow Gabe Dannenbring's work on TikTok or Instagram. More in the moment is after the break on Listener Supported SDPB. You are listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The 11th class of South Dakota Leaders is about to take session. Leadership South Dakota's class of 2025 kicks off in September, where 40 individuals from across the state will gather for the start of a really impactful and life-changing eight-month program. So we have John T. Meyer with us. He is Leadership South Dakota's Executive Director. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Lori. It's been a while.
You are that and a whole lot of other things. Which I think is relevant to the conversation we just heard.
Yeah, that was interesting in the studio listening to that.
And what this group of leaders is going to do, we only have to look to you to say, you know, it's okay to wear different hats.
Yeah.
All right, so let's tell us a little bit about Leadership South Dakota and what the plan is, and then I have some specific leadership questions
sure, you bet.
To ask you. Yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty excited. We're about ready to launch our 11th class in Pierre next month, and what we do is we take these 40 individuals across the state. So they make up leaders across the state, from big towns, big cities, to our small communities, from rural to East River, West River. And we go to six different spots. So Pierre, Brookings, Rapid City, Sioux Falls. We'll do Yankton and kind of rural South Dakota. And then we go to the reservation. We'll go to Mission. And then we graduate them back in Chamberlain. Mm-hmm. So it's a journey. It's a little bit of leadership content and curriculum, but it's a lot of experiences. We get to go sit in the B-1 bombers at Ellsworth. We get to go have lunch at a Hutterite colony. We hear from our state politicians as well as CEOs. And, you know, I like to say I want to give the Instagram tour of some of these communities where we're eating local food from an entrepreneur who's creating a restaurant, or, you know, getting together around the table and just talking. And so it's kind of, I joke, it's like, come for the leadership content and stay for your 39 new best friends.
Right. So they all come together. They're excited, but they don't know each other. And they're from all corners of the state. How do you start them off on the right foot?
Yeah.
So that they become 40 new best friends.
Sure. Good point. So we love circles at Leadership South Dakota. We gather in a circle when we start in Pierre at Drifters in Pierre, if you've ever been there. I guess it's technically Fort Pierre, I think. And one of the first exercises we do is we say, bring an artifact. You have a 1-minute message to bring an artifact that tells a story of your life. And usually by the end, people are crying. And it could be a miniature John Deere tractor because you grew up on a farm and your family, your parents were farmers. It could be a pair of running shoes because that signifies something in your life. Whatever it is, people bring a little artifact. And I think we don't get a lot of time in today's life where we sit around in this group, a large group, and just share something very personal. And, you know, some people at that point in Pierre are more vulnerable than others. But gosh, by the time we get to Brookings or Rapid City, we've sort of broke down the walls and really got to know each other.
Yeah. So we were talking just a minute ago with Gabe Dannenbring, and
Jackie Wilbur and Gina Benz about being comfortable being known.
Sure.
And so in the big sense on social media, being comfortable showing up there, but then also in a room full of people bringing an artifact that tells the story of your life, how do you become comfortable being known in those ways? You've thought about that a lot.
Yeah, I think the world is craving vulnerability from our leaders in a world where it's so, to use the term, like Instagram filtered, right? And I think now our sort of radar or BS detector is getting a lot stronger, I think, as citizens. And we're kind of like, I don't know if that's who that person really is. Like, I don't know if I believe what, you know, and I think what we have to do as leaders is show up as our true, and I hate the term is a little overused, but authentic selves.
Yeah.
And social media is one way to do that. Now, granted, sometimes it can be performative. But I think even when the cameras are out of the equation and you're sitting around in a circle, being yourself. And I think great leaders, this applies to social media too, but it's sometimes not always what they say, but it's how they say it, right? Okay. We live in a world where I think packaging an idea or giving a name to something, just being poignant in how you communicate a message, that's really fascinating to me. How do you speak that in a way that sticks?
Yeah. Is it as simple as turning the camera on yourself and talking? Because what I'm also wondering about is, like, if you, in that conversation, I think people can hear, you know, if you're at a younger generation, you maybe grew up with this, for better or for worse, that will impact you in one way. And then there's people who didn't grow up with this at all and are trying to enter it for the first time. Yeah. It's documented forever. And we tell our kids, like, whatever you put out there, it's going to be there forever. So on one hand, it's easy to say, well, I'm documenting my journey. I was in this field and now I'm not. I'm in a different field. On the other hand,
It's funny because we use these tools now, and yet if you're our age, everybody's like, oh, I'm so glad that social media didn't exist when I was in high school,
right?
Or college or whatever. So I think I agreed with the gentleman about saying we as adults have to set the standard for what that looks like as far as, you know, sort of social media ethics or good behavior or whatever that might be. You know, one interesting thing, I've been coming on the show since 2010 when we started a company called Nine Clouds, which was teaching South Dakota companies how to use social media at the advent of social media. And we've said this back then, and I would still say it rings true today, which is choose the platform or the media that feels most native to you. Mm. If you hate being on camera, I don't think you should be on camera. But if you love to use your voice, right? Like a podcast makes a lot of sense besides just radio. Or the written word, the blog post, newsletters, like choose the way that you like to communicate that feels both comfortable, but also sort of authentic to your style.
Yeah. And how do you handle the things that you look back on and say, oh, I set this goal and I set it publicly and then maybe I didn't hit it.
Sure.
Because you have to, I guess I'm getting at this and, you know, sometimes it reveals a little bit about me when I ask these questions, but I'm not always comfortable telling people that I have a goal.
Yeah.
Like
I
want to show up and I've done the thing, but I don't want to tell you I'm about to do the thing. And other people are like, oh, it brings accountability. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be seen wanting something.
Interesting.
I only want to be seen having achieved it.
I do think there's a lot of interesting psychology behind what people post online. I would agree that, like, you know, I've written newsletters, I've had blogs, I've had social media sort of challenges, and I often think it's more of a public journal, right? Like it's almost like I'm posting this into the world because I probably fall in the accountability bucket. Like I want you to know that I'm achieved. Like, so this year my goal is to work out every single day of the year. And I'm sure that, like, my followers are annoyed by me posting that I ran or went to the gym or – but it's not about them. It's for me.
Okay.
You know, it's for me to, like, create this streak, sort of like I think of Jerry Seinfeld's, like, don't break the chain, right? He wrote a joke every single day.
Yeah.
And hopefully, maybe – I don't really care, but if maybe along the way it might inspire somebody.
Well, and I was looking at your stuff, and you better every day. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I always think about you, that growth mindset. And sometimes when I read that, I internalize it, and I get exhausted, like, oh, my God, I cannot be better every day.
Sure.
But then I ask myself, well, better at what?
Yeah.
Right? So this morning, I mean, I sat outside and looked at the trees, and I talked to a little squirrel for a while. And I was like, oh, that's my better today, is to spend a moment in solitude and quiet. So better every day is individual.
100%. Customized and like however you want to measure that. I think the idea is that we're these incomplete people and I believe we don't ever actually really finish the journey, right? It is the journey and not the destination.
Yeah.
And so it's the desire to push yourself. And this goes way back to, like, I'm a big fan of Ryan Holiday's work. He's an author that talks a lot about stoicism. And okay, you can go back to, like, Greek philosophy when we talk about the power of discipline and, yeah, like your point, meditation or peace or time with your thoughts. And, yeah, so I just like this this idea of being sort of an incomplete product and always under construction.
Yeah. I love the idea of social media in some ways just being for yourself too, even though even though it's public.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, this probably gets more a little bit of the marketing sales world, but it is a tool that everyone needs to consider in today's world. And I agree with the gentleman from before about it's not going away, right? It's only going to become more and more normalized and baked for better or worse. And so the way I use social media has changed in my career change. So from Lemonly, it was like, I'm a CEO of a company. Here's my family. I live in Sioux Falls. Some of my hobbies. And now I very much, as a coach and leader of a leadership program, view it as marketing and sales. Because when you're a coach, what I've learned is people don't, you kind of just give it all away for free. Like, everything I teach to my entrepreneurs, you could probably go to YouTube and find for free. But I'm going to, you want to learn that stuff directly with me, because either you like my personality, you like my own sort of mission and my own journey, you want the customization or the personalization. And so, like, you know, the content is free in today's world. The ideas are cheap. It's about the execution.
Yeah. I trust you.
That's
why I follow you.
That's why people listen to you too, right? Yeah. Absolutely. And you've been on the mic for a long time, and you continue to show up. And I would even challenge your thinking of, like, if you do make a mistake or, like, some of that behind the scenes content we were talking about off air, that's part of who you are too, right? Yeah. Like, it's part of the
journey.
I
was telling you, I don't like behind the scenes because I don't want anybody to see that. I don't want them to see how hard I worked.
Now I'm putting you on blast here.
Yeah, exactly. It's too late. It's over. The producers are going to make me do behind the scenes now because you've proved them right. But these are the questions that we ask ourselves as leaders to say, how do I show up authentically in this way?
Yeah, and I remember way back to college, this concept we learned about leaders being on stage or off stage. And the idea was that, like, in the JFK versus Nixon election, right, it was the first debate that was on TV.
Yeah.
And Nixon was sweating, his makeup was dripping, and JFK looked confident and charming and good looking. Yeah. And it was like, whoa, the game has changed. And this is probably a 2006 or 7 class where social media wasn't even really quite a thing yet. And even then, it was like the best place you could be was side stage if you're a Barack Obama in 2008, because there is no more off stage. You're always on stage. And that was 2008. Now, I think in today's election, now we're debating whether or not rally photos are real because of AI.
Right.
Like,
right.
Everything is on stage now. And so I think people don't even want to be side stage now. Yeah. They're trying to, like, always be in front, and it's kind of exhausting.
Yeah. All right, as we wrap up today's show, I want to bring back to this Leadership South Dakota thing. And one of the things that maybe is really worth thinking about is that you are a leader in your life, in your family, even if it's of yourself.
Yes.
Taking the time to think about who you are as a leader is good for everybody. And doing that in community through a Leadership South Dakota is a big investment in your future.
Yes, I agree. It's not about the 40 folks with the biggest titles or largest salaries. It's about making these investments in 40 people. At the end of the program, we ask them, as a result of graduating, I will blank, and they finish that statement.
Yeah.
And I think about 10 years in now, Rick Melmer started this program. We're 485 alumni strong. It's pretty exciting to think about the people answering that I will statement, because you're right. Leadership shows up at home, in your church, in your community, and in your job.
It's the future of South Dakota right there that you're helping craft.
That's the hope.
We're in good hands.
Oh, thank you.
Meyer,
very
thank
kind,
you.
Lori.
We'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good.
We'll put some links up to all of John T's work. You probably already know him, but we'll give you some links to his work as well after the show. That is our show for today. We hope that it served you. Tomorrow, the Dakota Political Junkies are here. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. And behind the scenes, I just forgot what we're going to talk about. There's my moment of authenticity, but I know it's going to be good. From all of us at SDPB, thank you for listening.